This week, I'm joined by my co-DM to talk about just that. How do we share world building and DMing duties at the table? Welcome to We Speak Common. Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of the D&D podcast for everyone, because here we speak common. This is the show that's brought to you in partnership with The Dice Dungeon, your one-stop shop for beautiful, pristine, and premium D&D dice, from glass to resin to proper full cast metal sets, as well as all the other things that you would need to play Dungeons & Dragons. Of course, dice are one of the most important pieces, but a rule book might help. You can get all of the source books and adventures from Dice Dungeon, as well as things like rolling trays and spell cards. You can have a look. There's a link in the description below. And if you use the code WESPEAKCOMMON on checkout, you get yourself 10% off your entire order. We're also brought to you in partnership with Describe. That's D-S-C-R-Y-B. They're the place to go if you're not very good at that old creative writing. If you are not an imaginative sort, but you know, you still like playing imaginative role-playing games, and you need help explaining what your world looks like, smells like, sounds like, all that kind of stuff, then they've got you covered. A link for them is below too. And if you want to have a look at their scenes, they've got a bunch of them for free. But if you want to subscribe for the full nearly 4,000 now, which is bonkers, they add them every week, then you can use the code COMMON for 10% off every single month for 2 years while you're subscribed. Of course, at some point during this episode, I will sell those wonderful products and sponsors to my guest, who today, for the first time in a long time, is my good friend James. Hello, James.
Hello.
It's been a while.
Yes, I've returned from the depths of the United Kingdom school system.
I thought you were going to say I've returned from the dead, and then you went even worse and said you came back from the school system, which, let's be honest, is like a hell on high water.
It's like coming back from the dead, just a lot less cool.
And a lot more tiring, I would imagine, too.
Yes.
Yeah. To clarify, James is not retaking his GCSEs. He teaches them. So James is one of the selfless people, I call them crazy, who devote their lives to the young, the little rats.
I mean, we call ourselves crazy. Still not sure how I do it.
No, I'm not sure either, to be honest. But it is good to have you here. It's good to actually catch up and talk D&D. Obviously, we do it on a non-recorded front quite frequently, but it's nice to do it in front of the microphone with you again.
Yeah, it's been a good while.
How are you? How is life? What's going on in your world?
It has just been busy, back to work, and whilst I'm sat there, the kids are there working away in my brain, I'm just thinking, how am I going to kill them all on Saturday when in the depths of the Nine Hells?
Yeah. Oh, we've got a big like couple of weeks ahead of us, because we've had a break, and I was recording with Sam yesterday for an episode that came out last week about how we'd had, it's either 3 or 4 weeks off since we last played D&D now, and it's been driving me crazy. And we're playing a game today, the day that we're recording, and then the following week is our big finale, big finisher, definitely going to finish. There is not going to be a second part. It's definitely going to end on that day, Descent campaign. Correct?
By hell or high water, it will end.
I'm imagining us getting to Zariel's throne room, and like, she's just so incredibly difficult to kill because you're gonna kill us. That's how we're gonna end the campaign.
Well, maybe. I mean, we'll see. I've got a couple of surprises in store.
Okay. All right. Good. And I cannot wait to get back in the shoes of Claff Hune to begin with, but also to finish the first arc of his story off, because I remember, James, it is just the beginning for Claff. We are taking him further eventually. That's your next challenge.
Yes. Well, I look forward to, because you can never get enough of Claff Hune shenanigans.
Yeah, I'm glad. I mean, he's definitely my all-time favourite character, and who'd have thought that my all-time favourite character would be a warlock and not a wizard? And a warlock paladin at that, too.
That basically, you've sort of absorbed two other members of our group there.
Yeah, people think Joe went off for a new job. I actually just ate him. He's gone now forever. yeah, and I'm looking forward to the end of that too, because we're going to do a big recap episode on Descent at some point after the dust has settled, like we did with Waterdeep Dragon Heist. So that'll be good fun too. I mean, I know the adventure's been out for a while, but hey-o. It'd be good to do.
Everybody loves to hear about how I torment you, so...
And you have done a very good job of it as well, but that, so there's that. What else is going on in the world? I mean, I think we're like 2 weeks away from a brand new D&D book. Is it the 24th or the 26th that Wild Beyond the Witchlight comes out? So that's
still need to order
pretty soon.
That.
Yeah, I can't remember. See, when all of the three books were announced, so we got Wild Beyond the Witchlight, Fizbin's Tome of Dragons, yep. And there's another one, isn't there, that's been announced?
Strixhaven, isn't it?
Strixhaven, yeah, that's it. I, when all of them were announced within that like week till 2 week span, I went to Ben at Dice Dungeon and said, yeah, put me aside a copy of this and this, and I can't remember whether Wild Beyond the Witchlight was one I told him to put aside. So it's going to be a surprise whether he sends me an invoice or not, basically. So if he hasn't, it's fine, because I know that you've got a Beyond version, have you not?
Oh yeah, I've already got them ready when they had their big sale on. I took the opportunity to get them then and there.
But I will be diving into it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm actually not too interested. I'm not like overly interested in Wild Beyond the Witchlight. I don't think the Feywild really grabs me. Not the way it's being presented anyway. I like kind of creepy Feywild. But I am going to have a look at the new rules and player options. So like the new playable races. Because I know that the fairy, god damn it, is making its way into official 5e. that little fucker. There's like rabbit people, I think, as well. So... yeah, something. Yeah, it's very fairy tale. So, I mean, I'll check all that stuff out. Whether I'll like use it, I don't know. But we'll have a look into it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a book goblin, so that's my excuse.
Well, I need to order some like bookends for my bookshelf, because it's getting to a point now where I've got my D&D collection propped up by my core rule set limited edition and my Art and Arcana, and so they act as bookends. But now it's got to the point where if I put more books in, there's not enough space, so I need to get actual bookends to like arrange it better. But I'm still missing a physical copy of Ghosts of Saltmarsh. I'm still missing a physical copy of that might be the only source book, actually.
Probably.
I've got Akink. I've got Mordenkainen's, Tasha's, Van Richten's, Guildmaster's Guide. I haven't got Theros. I haven't got a physical copy of Theros yet.
Yeah.
I think they might be the only two, apart from Adventures, obviously. I don't count those unless I'm running them.
I mean, you're after bookends. I had to buy a whole new set of shelves the other, like, couple months ago because I'd filled them up.
God. I do need to rearrange my shelves and work it out, but I like that they're all on my top shelf and they're just high enough that I can just lean over the top of my big armchair and pull out a book. And if I put them on the I don't really want to split them between two levels, because then they're not all on one level, and like it's just my OCD goes a bit crazy if I don't do it right. But yeah. I've got to work it out.
I suppose the other thing that's happened since last time is we had D&D Magic as well.
Oh, we have. Yeah, I haven't actually talked about this on the podcast yet. But yeah, we bought a booster draft box for Adventures in Forgotten Realms, and it was what, six of us in total that got together to play.
Yeah, I think six.
And that was good. You can actually see a photo of half the table on the We Speak Common Instagram. That's the place where I've posted it. That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that.
I loved it.
I think
I did win the big commander game, so
yeah. I'm okay. So I came last in the tournament, but I came second in the commander game, which I cannot against you and Big Mama Tiamat. I cannot complain at. Although, let me go on record here on recording, the fact that you have pulled two Tiamats, one of them full art, still royally pisses me off.
And the other one was foil as well. Not just
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, just rub it in. It's fine. Whatever.
I need to make myself a list of the cards I'm missing, actually, still.
Because you're going for a full set, aren't you?
Yep.
Oh, man. And they've now announced that they're not doing another D&D crossover as a core set, but they will be doing commander sets, right? Is that...
Yeah, something like that.
Which I'm not mad at. I mean, I've not played Commander since we played it at our get together. So that was my first foray, and I did enjoy it. And Magic's one of those games where I'm not very good. I always tend to come last, but I enjoy the process of losing. So I know that sounds like no, it's fine. I just have fun. But I do actually. It's like one of the only games I actually enjoy being bad at because it makes it a challenge all the time.
Especially when you're in a big group.
Mm-hmm. So I like the idea of playing more six-person commander games. That would be a lot of fun. I think we should definitely do more of that.
Yeah.
Oh, God, we've done a lot since we've caught up last.
This
is what happens when you go back to the classroom. I just don't see you.
I'm in exile now, so...
Yeah, pretty much. And we've also played, is it two sessions or one session of your campaign now?
Two sessions.
We ended
the first with you guys failing to rescue the children. And the second, you all just went off to carry on with your quest. What children?
I don't remember there being any children. What are you talking about? There were no kids that we needed to save. There's no weird mind manipulation magic going on there, James. What are you talking about? I don't remember children.
Any of
their parents.
No.
So this actually leads us quite nicely into our topic. For those that don't know, who might be newer listeners to the show or who haven't gone back and listened to some of the 3 years' worth of content at this point. Fucking hell, it's been a long time. There's something going on here between James and I where I run all of my games in the same version of my D&D universe, right? So all of my Faerun games happen on the same Faerun, and it has a canonical timeline of its own. All of my Spelljammer games happen within the same Spelljammer universe. My world has its own sphere within Spelljammer, which means that effectively... all of my characters from any game, any table that I run, I say my characters, all of the characters from any table that I run could cross over and meet each other. And I was talking to James about it a long time ago at this point.
Yeah.
And we were like, it's cool, isn't it? It's cool. What if we did that together? And I'm pretty sure that's what happened. I don't remember it happening any differently. I don't remember there being like a grand moment.
Well, no, there wasn't a grand moment. But I do remember us getting together to plan something, which since
and
went in the bin.
Getting really excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. So James now co-DMs in that what was my version of Faerun is now our version of Faerun. So when I talk about my version of Faerun to someone on the podcast, that also involves James because you have parts of the world that you look after. So I think we've like kind of unofficially split the world up into like our kingdoms. So like I've got Waterdeep and Daggerford, you've got Baldur's Gate and
I've got Phandalin.
Isles, Phandalin.
The Nine Hells.
The Nine Hells. I have Chult. And a bit of I kind of have dominion over Thay, as in the Thayan people, in a bit in the way because I'm using them more than you, but they're going to kind of cross over and be
both of ours now. I think they're going to be bit more shared than you realise.
No, they definitely are now that your game's hit the ground and is running. And then what else? I think the rest is kind of open. I think I've kind of put a flag on Icewind Dale because I want to do some stuff up there, but I haven't done much. And then I've got a one-on-one campaign with Sam where he's kind of traveling all around mostly the Sword Coast because that's the Unforgotten Realms at this point, but we'll be potentially going other places. And so when I have to do something in the world or when James has to do something in the world, we often ping each other messages. So like I think the last one I sent you was, oh, by the way, the God of Death is dead. That was it.
But I mean, Hang on. I don't think that's... We can technically quite class that as the last, because they did since figure out what was going
on.
We
won't say any more on that, but yeah. Yes. Because this is the thing. James is my DM and I'm your DM. So while we co-run this world and our campaigns cross over each other, we are both still players in that world. So there, to an extent, we know more than the other players at the table, but we don't know everything. And it often leads to fun interactions where I will be running a game, but an NPC from your game will cross over. And So suddenly we'll both be DMing at the table. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about, because it's been requested on the We Speak Common Discord server by, and I'm going to butcher this name, I'm so sorry, Enthusiali? I think that's your name. I mean, screen names. They're harder to say than real names.
At least it wasn't Sam this time.
They're all Sam in disguise. It's every single patron is actually just Sam, just with a different account. He really loves this show. He just talks to himself on the server over and over again.
I need his job then.
yeah, tell me about it. So this was it was a while ago, and this is how long I've been trying to nab you, James, for this. But they asked, have there been any episodes on co-DMing? And we did do one a long time ago, but we've had a lot more practice, and it's a good time to revisit it now that some plans that we had in place before we talked about it have since been put into action.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk about like what it's like, why we do it, and how to do it, he says, maybe. We'll talk about how we do it, and then you can form your own opinions off of that. So I guess we should start with the why. And for me, I mean, apart from the obvious of, well, it's fun, is we have, and I always say, I consider myself very lucky that this is the case for us. We have had the same D&D group for the last 9 years, more or less. Yeah. I think we've had some additions come in and we've had one person leave. And that one person leave was Joe, leaving to go to move across country. But he still comes back and plays when he can.
Hang on, can we just go back a step? 9 years? Has it been 9 years?
No, I don't think it's 9 years for you. Not for you. Sorry. It's 9 years for me. It's 6 years for you, I think.
Still six. That's flown by.
Yeah, because you joined when we ran Curse of Strahd, when Curse of Strahd came out. So when did... I tell you what, that's how we'll know. What was the release date? I'm Googling it.
I joined as they got to the end of the Death House as well.
Yeah, so 2016, so that's 5 years. So it'll be coming up to 6 years in March next year. That was March 15th, 2016, Curse of Strahd released. Uh-huh. So... Yeah, so coming up to 6 years for you. And since you joined, we've added Craig, Sam, and Ray.
Yeah.
And then Joe, and Joe has kind of semi-retired. He's part-time now. I consider him part-time. But apart from that, it's always been you, me, Joe, Phoebe, and Wes. And the core was you, me, Fee, and Wes. And Ayrton. Yeah. Ayrton is kind of... I consider Ayrton part-time because he is, like, trying to head off to Japan. So, you know, who knows? I suppose we've had two people leave then. So it's been a long time, and we've had the same group, and we're incredibly lucky in that because we know how we play, and we all know how we... work together and you know, where our boundaries are and all that kind of stuff. And like I've said before, like it means that we can have incredible, interesting role play experiments, like Wesley and I's characters in Descent hating each other and still being okay with each other and stuff, you know, like all that good stuff of being friends for years. And like Wesley and I and Joe have all known each other since we were like 4 years old, you know, so some of us go well back. But it did mean that we were only running one main campaign like for every year and a half because we were the same group. So we started to obviously share DM responsibilities. And then like we were finding our feet with it. Like we had games and they were kind of dropping off and they were coming together. And then we had the one shot that is no longer a one shot that we played on birthdays that still needs to be finished. the one shot that Wesley did. There's been, you know, the talkings of Phoebe running again, like all these little things, but we've only ever really had one main campaign. So for us to be able to say, hey, we're going to share this world and share the DM responsibilities of it and have multiple games happening in the same world, that way, for me, we're transitioning the story from the party to the world. And no matter what characters you play, you're still the same player in the same world. And so you're still telling the same story. And so we always feel like we're playing an important game of D&D. Even when Sam plays a one-on-one game with me, and I have, like, at the moment, Wesley's with him because I've got people coming in and out. When we play that game, even though it's completely disconnected from the characters fighting the Death Curse, well, the Death Curse is still going on in that world, so they still feel the effects of it. So it still feels like they're playing an important story in that world.
Yeah, and it's very much that idea of making the world lived in.
Oh, yeah.
Because we, whatever campaign we're playing, we'll probably end up hearing about the other one. I don't know, especially with running Tyranny now, that's, and the Death Curse, that's really going to come to a head. Because if they die, they're dead.
Yeah, and we've experienced that a little bit already so far. It's not fun, it's scary. But yeah, so like that for me is the main reason to do it. And I suppose, like, when you hear the words co-DM, you might think, oh, two DMs at a table. And we do that at times, and we'll get into that. But a lot of the time, the way we talk about it is we're running games in the same universe. And so if I have a plan for something to happen in a certain part of the world, and I need James to be aware for his plans that are happening in the world, we'll have a conversation about it. And like, when a character is created by another player, but it comes from a very specific place. I think we had, for example, there's a drow in Tyranny that you're running, and they came from Menzo Baranzan.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to click who we were talking about. I don't want to say too much in case any of our players are listening. But we had to have a big conversation about that drow's backstory and how Menzo Baranzan falls into our version of Tyril and Faerûn, and how the drow fall in and what lore we're using and what we're not, so that when we both use the drow in the future, we're on the same page and it's all consistent and part of the same world. So there's a lot of that going on behind the scenes, and then the fun bits of when we end up DMing at the same table, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, I know exactly what I want to talk about for that one.
Okay, cool. What do you get out of it? Like, because for me, it's that kind of that lived in world that is only bigger because of our collaborations and because we work well together.
So I think that is one of the main things. But on top of that, I really do think it increases the quality of our games. Partly because of that, but I also just get out a sense of self-satisfaction of, yes, I get to know things, because as you well know, I like to know things and I don't like not knowing.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah. And that's my main motivation. Well, I like to know lore.
I realized very quickly that I am more, I prefer being a DM to a player because it keeps me 100% focused throughout the game, but also I get to know what's going on. I get to, like, I get all of the dramatic irony of what the choices mean and stuff like that. So there's someone shouting outside this studio that I found myself in. The window's open, it's very hot. Don't know if you can hear that. It's a professional setup here, don't worry. But like, I like being a player in your game, and then when something happens, I go, oh, I know what this is. Oh shit. And then I get to watch other people interact with it and have fun with it. And you know, there's a lot of trust and respect there for the, like, the meta gaming and the ability to not use that knowledge. And I think that that's, you know, that goes back to that thing of, like, us being the same group and knowing that we have that trust and that way that we play in place. Yeah. So that we don't, you know, I'm just going to go and shut the window because they are properly, I don't know what, it's like an ice cream party going on outside my house right now.
I mean, shut my windows because our next door neighbours like to occasionally just argue in the street.
Oh, fun. All right, hang on. This is some candid shit right now. There we go. It's just
pure quality on We Speak Common. Move the microphone. Hang on. Can you hear that? I'm moving the microphone. Oh, just going to tap it a few times.
I can hear those springs on the thing.
I've just deafened some headphone listeners. I'm so sorry. Right. Let's, anyway, where were we? I don't know.
I've forgotten as well.
It's fine. So the fact that we have the trust to do that. So I think it's really important that if you are going to think about doing this kind of thing, there are a few things that I always say make it important, make it work, that are important. And that's the first of all, we know that neither of us are, for lack of a better phrase, metagamers. Yeah. I've spoken before about how I think metagaming is a negative phrase. It doesn't necessarily need to be negative, because if you were writing a novel, we'd call it dramatic irony. And as a player, having meta knowledge gives you that dramatic irony. But this is a different level in that.
Yeah, I think with metagaming, sometimes to some degree, obviously when you're in combat, you're basically constantly metagaming, because it's at that point you are pure in game.
Yeah, it's a game there. Yeah,
but obviously story wise, it is something you do need to avoid, because not only will you spoil it for yourself, you'll spoil it for everybody else as well. You know, even if opening that wagon is going to blow everything up, you don't know that. And you still open it and blow everything up and have everybody angry at you for years afterwards.
Yeah, and it still comes up at daily D&D games, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It still comes up that you opened that bloody wagon.
Oh.
Anyway. So that's one. But the other one, the other important thing that makes it work is that, and this is what kind of sparked the topic on the Discord server, is that I very much consider James my DM, and I think you consider me yours, in the sense that we both know. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, tell me if you think I'm shit, James. It's okay. Like, you're only being recorded for all eternity, but I'm not gonna, I'm not bribing you here, although I will pay you later. You know, we appreciate the same things in D&D, in that, like, you're not there for the combat while I'm there for the story. You know, we're both there for the story. We're both there for the lore. We're both there for the world building. The combat's good fun. We enjoy it. You know, so we both appreciate the same things in a D&D game as each other. And so I know that if we're sharing the world and I'm playing in your game, I'm going to enjoy it as much as if we're sharing the world and you're playing in my game. So therefore we make the same kind of decisions as we'd want to in the world, meaning that the world doesn't feel like it's made by two different people. That was a very long-winded way of saying that. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it really shows for in games as well, when either of us is DMing and something happens and we both just look at each other and either it's either a nod or an oh my god, I can't believe you're actually doing this.
Yeah, there have been a few times where something happens and we share a glance and it's like, and everyone at the table now goes, oh fuck. Like, oh no, what have we just done? Whereas before it was like, it would be like, what's happening? What's going on? And I remember the first time that happened. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it's like, it's kind of like having a council. Like, you know how King has a council?
Yeah.
It's like we have a council of one. So we'll sit there and maybe there's been times when Brom, bless him, has had his own storyline that we wrote together. And in the sense that, you know, we sat down and we said, okay, here's the gist of it. And then I think I was DMing at this point for Brom. So I came to you and I said, here's what I want to do. Here's some ideas I have. What do you think? And you gave me feedback and we worked on it and we mixed into the world. But then I took that away and I let it play out how I chose to let it play out.
Yeah.
And you weren't aware of. So you were experiencing bits that you'd heard about in ways that you didn't know. So there's still elements of surprise. But then when it got to the point where Brom moved on from me as a DM and went to potentially be in your shoes, and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
I was able to basically pick up everything that I'd done, hand it over to you and say, here's half the novel. off you go, finish it.
Yeah.
And then it was in your hands and it naturally moved over. So there were times when like Bron would do something and I'd go, look at you. And you just smile and nod and I'd be like, okay,
yeah,
all right, I guess we're doing this. And then something massive and scary would happen.
I think a thing to note though is it's never the case of it's all just in my hands or all just in your hands. It might be the case of, you know, I might have an index finger or, you know, a couple of fingers in there. Never enough to spoil the book, but just enough to make sure that when it does get handed over, it's not completely disjointed, confusing, or like, you know, what on earth has happened here kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like the opposite of the mystery box. I forget which director it is that does that. Who was originally going to direct all of the three Star Wars sequels?
J.J. Abrams?
J.J. Abrams. He does a mystery box. So he does has this technique where he leaves a mystery in his films for the next director, but he doesn't actually say what's in it. And so the next director has to like work that out. That's shit. That's awful because then it could be anything. And it like, it. I mean, look at the Star Wars sequels. Don't at me. They're shit. Okay. We're not getting in. They're awful. I don't want to hear from any fanboys that like the sequel movies. I'm sorry. Why did she bury fucking Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber on the planet that he hated the most? It made no sense. Anyway, well,
that's the podcast finished.
Yep. Do you disagree? Do you?
I don't disagree, but I know it's a contentious topic.
Yeah, well, it's. I'm not. I mean, look, if We Speak Common gets boycotted and no one listens to it anymore, I can sleep easy knowing that I have at least pissed off the sequel trilogy fanboys. I do not like those films, but there we go. It's gone on record now. I can't take it back. Watch me, 20 minutes later, watch me happen. I bet you a fiver that later I go, well, they're all right in some respects, but they're okay. I'm doing it now. There are some bits that I enjoyed. But anyway, God, I'm such a fence-sitter. I have to please everybody.
Stick to your guns, Ben.
They're shit. Anyway, where was I? We don't leave mystery boxes. We leave mysteries for you to, you know, have play out how you want, but we also talk about and know kind of where things are going to go and help lead each other in those directions so that the stories make sense. And that's important to keeping that cohesion in it all.
Yeah.
Do you know what else is really important to keeping cohesion in it all? Regular product placement and sponsors.
I was about to say good descriptions usually help.
Fuck, that's much better. Should we do it again? Should we just cut it? Yeah, I'll make sure to remember to cut it. Do you know what else has really good cohesion, James?
Good descriptions?
It is. I'm glad you're picking up what I'm putting down there. Yeah, it is good descriptions. It's things like the amazing pre-written box text by creative writers that you can get at describe.com. Have you been to check them out recently, James? Have you been to have a look at Describe?
I haven't.
He's going to say no. He's going to say no.
Because I've been too busy, but I've heard that they've got over or near enough 4,000 descriptions now.
It's amazing. I don't know where you would hear a tidbit of information like that, but yes, it must be a very good D&D podcast. Yes, there is nearly 4,000 box texts pre-written for you on Describe, and I'll forgive you for not having had a chance to go and look because you're so busy teaching the next generation. God save us all. But if you were to go and have a look, there's a bunch that you can get access to for free. And if you want to jump in with a subscription, there are different tiers, different levels, have access to all of those scenes for monsters, locations, and spells, as well as soon items. Then you can use the code COMMON for 10% off every single month for the first 2 years. The other thing that helps with good cohesion is, of course, as I mentioned in another timeline, not previously, because I will have remembered to cut it from this episode, of course, it's not a bit, is good product placement. So occasionally when our players are walking through our world, they might find, I don't know, maybe Dice Dungeon dice. It's never happened, but we, I mean, if Ben pays me enough, I'll start putting them in every game.
I mean, Hrothgar has a copy of Kobolds and
he does,
whatever it's called.
What is it? He has a copy of Caves and Kobolds.
Yeah, so you know what? Yeah. I'm making it canon. He now has...
Dice Dungeon Dice.
Dice Dungeon Dice, yeah.
Yeah, and Hrothgar is multiplied across the multiverse, fighting the many versions of Strahd in every single Halloween game we play. So
yeah.
That means there is a copy of both Caves and Kobolds, and that's our version of D&D within D&D, and Dice Dungeon Dice across the multiverse. So that's impressive. That's an ad placement there, isn't it? There you go. If you want to get your hands on some multiverse-spanning dice, head over to Dice Dungeon. There's a link below. Of course, they do more than just dice, but those dice are premium and beautiful and where they started, so it's what I'll mention first. Go and have a look at their collection. Grab yourself a set. Maybe Kirill the Golden if you want some interesting lore baked into your dice, written by myself and Joe. You can get 10% off your entire order with the code WeSpeakCommon at checkout. The more you spend, the more you save. Hey, there's the cheesy wink off camera. But yeah, so let's talk about some examples of things that we've done as co-DMs and some of those times where we've been DMing together as but two DMs at the table, at the same table, because I think those are the most interesting. And I'm actually just going to double check the actual topic suggestion, because I think the main point from it was how do you DM together. So we've talked about our base, which is that we share the world and we come up with that stuff together. So let's now talk about actual co-DMing.
Shall we start with the least, what I'm going to call the least intrusive method?
Yes, let's do that.
So our current world, if you will, began probably just after the start set. So I think that's a fair assessment.
In terms of canon, the year that we play in currently is we're heading into the middle of like summer of 1492.
Yeah.
So it's just after Dragon Heist if you set it at the start of 1942. But yeah, in terms of canon adventures, it started with Phandalin and Starset.
Yeah, but essentially, that's when we sort of merged our Sword Coast's favorites into one. And the way that worked is obviously we had characters in that played for the start set, and then they went on into Waterdeep. And I think it was that campaign wasn't forgotten, because occasionally, and we sort of sat, we figured out that the timeline for this, they would receive a knock at the door.
Mm-hmm.
I would take over, and they would very simply receive their payment from the mine that had been set up and sorted, and that'd be it.
The dividends.
Yeah. It was just a little insert of a short conversation. Here's the stuff, and then off.
Yeah. So the mine gets rebuilt in Phandalin, and then I don't know how long we decided it was until the money was available, but you said to me, okay, it's probably about now that it's turning over a profit, so when do you want me to come in? And I think I said, if they're in the bar, because obviously they're playing Dragon Heist, they own a bar, if they're in the bar and everybody's there, or at least enough of them are there from the original party, because a couple of characters changed,
yeah,
then literally just knock on the door. And I was like, you knocking will be the sign I need. And yeah, I think that was the first time we did it as well, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. We were sat around the table, and I literally just...
Oh, I think that's like the last time we played in person as well. Oh, my God. Yeah. And everybody freaked out.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't coming from me. And I remember Joe, like, looking at you... You were at one head of the table when I was at the other head of the table, which was perfect. Looking at you, then looking at me and being like, what? And I was like, oh, it turns out there's someone at the door. And he was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And there was a moment of the players being like, okay, well, I'm going to go over and open the door then. And I was like, yeah, you go over, the door opens. It's like, and standing on the other side is, and I think you just took over.
Yeah, I just straight up took over, described who was still there, and then said what he said. You know, I basically started DMing.
Yeah, just like any other game you were in charge of, yeah.
Yeah.
You gave over the money, and I think luckily my character who had been in Phandelver, who had become an NPC, was there, so I got to use him.
Yeah.
They had a brief conversation, and then you left.
Yeah. And I think that particular example is a good way of showing how you don't have to completely forget about campaigns perhaps someone else in your group has run. You know, don't shoehorn it in there, but if it's, you know, if something pops up and it would make sense for this thing from a past campaign to pop up, have the person who DM'd it just take over for, like, you know, a couple of minutes and then hand the reins back.
Yeah. Another non-intrusive one and a fun one, and this is in the same vein, but instead of previous campaigns, it's campaigns that are running alongside, was for Orlo, my wizard, was having a one-on-one campaign that you were running for me alongside the Dragon Heist game.
Yeah.
And he was an NPC that the Dragon Heist party could go to and talk to at any time, and he wasn't involved in the campaign much unless they specifically asked for his help in like casting a spell or something. And so the rest of the time he was like, either he was like in the bar and they could talk to him, or he was out, you know, doing something.
Yeah.
And your character in Dragon Heist was a wizard also. And he wanted to go and speak to the Blackstaff. And Orlo was like, oh, Kiro, can I come with you? Like, can I, is that okay?
Yeah.
Because he also wanted to speak to the Blackstaff, but, you know, it's not his game. But this is the thing. It's a lived-in world. We like to keep it realistic. And he was like, oh, if you're going, I'll go with you. So we had this scene where two of our characters walked into a room with an NPC while I was DMing. Kiro spoke to the Blackstaff as me, as the DM. And then Orlo spoke to the Blackstaff as you, as the DM.
Yeah.
And we had both of us DMing the same NPC at the same table in the same game. And that sounds messy, but it wasn't. It worked.
Yeah.
I remember that one very fondly. I think I pissed her off.
You did.
Yes,
very much so. You got banned.
I have that effect on people. I have that effect on women in general. I mean, ask Phoebe, I piss her off all the time.
Oh, I must say that does provide an element of entertainment at the table.
It really does. But yeah, so there's this ability to have these moments where you switch seats randomly, and it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we have a lot of trust at our table, as I set up the episode saying. So our table were, our players were able to roll with it. You know, they were like, we don't know what's going on, but it's going to be good. Whereas, you know, if it's something that's new that you've never done and the group's a little less formed, maybe have a conversation about it beforehand and say, is it okay if we do this? But for us, it worked really well with that surprise factor. Another one I really like, I know you've probably got another one you want to talk about, but one that I really enjoyed is when we had side quests. So because the world was so big and like Waterdeep's my turf, Baldur's Gate is yours.
Oh, yeah.
We had... Orlo being asked to go on a quest in his campaign to go off to Baldur's Gate. And that quest was set up in his solo game and he needed help. He knew he'd need help. So I said to James, oh, I might ask the Dragon Heist party, I might ask the Heroes of the Heist if they want to come with me. And so our Dragon Heist would have maybe one session or two sessions where you're in the DM chair and we're in Baldur's Gate instead. So it's a side quest. And we were like, awesome. Yeah, like, awesome. Let's do it. It's a nice palate cleanse because the whole campaign's happening in the city. Like, let's do it. So I approached the players and said, hey, would you guys be interested in doing a side quest for Orlo with your Dragon Heist party in Baldur's Gate for maybe one or two sessions? They were like, yes, absolutely. Let's do it. So the session started with me DMing with, and we pre-worked out how the party were going to teleport to Baldur's Gate using a wizard in Waterdeep. I can't remember his name. Do you remember his name?
I can't remember his name. I just remember the handover because it was beautiful.
Yeah, I know it began with a T, but he was a wizard in a tower in the Northwood, and he had a teleportation table. And we said, look, it makes sense that Orlo, with his background, would have researched this guy and reached out to him and paid for access to go across. Yeah. I said, look, you decide where it comes out in or around Baldur's Gate, whatever you need for the quest. Like, that's just how I'm going to hand over. And so it started with the normal stuff, me in the DM chair saying, okay, everybody, you know, DM stuff, set up the world, blah, 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 blah. This is what's happening. But also role-playing Orlo, basically as an NPC. He leads them all to this tower. He knocks on the door and James answers the door as the NPC.
Yeah.
So then you've got two DMs at the table because I've DM'd everyone up to this point, but you've got James there being this random, and he was crazy, a crazy wizard.
Yeah.
He was like, come in, don't go in there, don't go there, do this, go here. I think I was like, oh, this is how I imagine him. And I gave you an image. Like, I described an image, I described a persona. I was like, go wild with it. And you just took it and ran.
One thing I just remembered is you were like describing everybody walking through the corridors, and I would like randomly chuck in, yep, you just hear an explosion from the other side of that door, by the way.
yeah, it was like, oh yeah, as you're walking through the halls, the winding stairs go up endlessly, the windows show an outside unlike the city, and then James would be like, there's an explosion from the left in the back. And then green smoke comes out of that tunnel, and I was like, it's also chaotic. it was quite fun. I think it captured the wizard, the NPC, perfectly. But we got to the room, the pre-designed room with the teleportation circle, and I described the casting and, you know, like the runes on the floor glowing and the, you know, and then the wizard hushing them in, and you were like, quick, get in, go. And I was like, yeah, you step into the circle, you feel the weightlessness leave you, the whatever it was, I think we decided what the passphrase was, but I think it was like, you know, you feel that moment of weightlessness and your belly doing that thing with your belly jumping and flipping, and then you picked up like bang on the sentence with the next word.
Yeah, I can't remember how exactly what I said.
I think described like your feet touching the stone floor or something.
Yeah, you did, like,
and the light fading.
The spell be like taking effect, and I did is like the effect faded and revealed the area around them, which just worked really well as.
And it was seamless as well.
Yeah, it was a solid. We went from you to both of us to me.
The best way I could give an analogy is kind of like when you, like, you know how if you're playing Skyrim and you go from one location to another and there's that loading screen, but then when you play a game like what's the game that does it really well?
I suppose it's like
when you're.
In games like The Forest, what developers do is when you squeeze for a gap into another cave, that's just a clever way of getting a bit of loading in without a loading screen.
A loading screen, yeah.
Which is basically what we did.
It's like going from that to then playing like the game on the PS5, and you no longer need the loading screen because you've got sick hot SSDs now.
Yeah.
And so there is no loading screen, and it's just like, it's seamless transition. Oh. So that was an amazing experience, and because we'd prepared it, I think it blew everyone away a little bit. And then we did the same thing transitioning back to give that transition from Baldur's Gate back to Waterdeep to like hand over and say like, okay, you're in Ben's part of the world now. Okay, you're in James's part of the world now.
Yeah.
So that was cool. Is there another one that you've got?
Oh, yes. It was the tyranny meeting.
yes!
Because that was...
Yeah.
I found that hilarious. Hannah found it hilarious because... Obviously, you were playing, I think, was it, I can't remember the name now.
Lyriel.
That's the one. I can't believe I forgot that name.
Yeah.
You played Lyriel, and I was playing, like, the head of the Order of the Gauntlet, and, like, you just mentioned the word lich, and I just screamed out a lich. How dare you?
And she's, like, downstairs reading a book.
And obviously everyone else who's sort of, like, playing at this meeting is like, what the fuck is going on? It was like a chaotic council meeting, actually, at the table.
Yeah.
With, like...
Well, we planned originally to do it around the table, but obviously COVID happened, and also we Ray joined the group. So COVID hit us while we were playing Dragon Heist, and so obviously we transitioned to online, and then Ray joined the group on a more like semi-permanent basis. He's now with us every other week, and so we had to transitioned online anyway, and I have plans for the big finales of like TOA where we have people in person with the right on a screen and stuff, but it's now regularly online, and so we ended up doing online. But the plan was that Dragon Heist, I basically said to you, look, here are the three ways I'm imagining it ending based on decisions that you guys might make.
Yeah.
And either way, we're going to lead into this meeting to transition to the next story. And you were like, yeah, cool. And I was like, okay, the next story I want to run is Tomb of Annihilation. You were like, cool, the next story I want to run is Tyranny. And I was like, yeah, but I also kind of want to see Dungeon of the Mad Mage. And you were like, oh, yay. There's a lot there. And I was like, yes. I said, but there's also, I've also got this other, these other apocalypses like being built up on.
Yeah.
That are happening in other games. You're like, okay. And I was like, so let's have a, let's just have it all happen at once.
Yeah. I think we've got a bit of an issue now in that if either of our campaigns fail and they lose,
the world ends.
Our world literally ends. Whether that be
so
by
there's...
Dragonfire or the one I won't say because if somebody else is listening, yeah, it'll spoil it.
If the TOA party fail, the world won't end, but it will be a very dark place and it'll get worse. If the Tyranny party fail, it'll be a much darker place, but it won't necessarily end.
If they both fail,
they'll then be in a big fight.
It would be amazing.
I know. I kind of want them both to fail. But here's the thing. If the TOA party succeed in the... So where TOA finishes as a module, I've extended it. And there's a bit in the middle where they have to deal with another big, scary enemy before coming in contacts again with a Serac. And if that... And I'm going to say a line that's not a spoiler, but if you're in the know, you'll know who it is. And I'm not going to say who it is, but if you're in the know, you'll know who this creature is. So if they don't defeat this creature at like tier three, because obviously they're going to finish the campaign as written at like tier two, heading into tier three, if they don't defeat this creature at tier three before heading into the final fight with the Serac, then that creature, quote, coils themselves around the planet after eating the sun and constricts it.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, so there's that one too. So if the party then don't stop that one, the world ends. So we've got that one. Hjormungandr, basically, is the Norse name for that creature. But yeah, so there's all this stuff going on.
I suppose if you fail in Descent as well, oh dear.
Yeah, but we're not going to because I'm Lord of the Nine Hells. It's fine. Clath will triumph. We know this already to be true. So he is the Prophet Messiah.
That was the other thing as well at the meeting.
Oh, yeah. So the meeting basically was going to be the Avengers assemble moment where the players were invited after completing the Hero of the Heist status and completing that quest to come to the meeting, witness like all of the problems, and then be asked to help. Mm-hmm. And they all did in a way unexpected. So I thought, okay, they're all going to pick an adventure to go on, and they'll either pick TOA, Tyranny, or Dungeon. And then if it's TOA or Dungeon, I'll run that one. And then James will run Tyranny with new heroes or vice versa, depending on where the heroes decide to go. The heroes all retired, semi-retired, and they will come out of retirement for special occasions.
Well, they've got jobs.
Because they have jobs, yeah. So they're retired from adventuring because they've got things they need to do. Carrie is in charge of the locksmiths. Kiro is the apprentice blackstaff. You know, Lilith is, you know, now the
master of operations
for the Black Network. So, you know, there's all this stuff going on. Brom's got to go and find out what's going on with the Fungus Lord, you know. So there's all this stuff. So they stepped away. But the meeting was, if you've ever read Tyranny, and you'll be able to fill in more of this, there's a lot of players in that meeting, right?
Oh, God, yeah, like there's so many different people from, I mean, just the Lords Alliance, even though it's meant to be one faction, basically has its own mini factions in it. But then you've got the other factions at the meeting as well. So it is like, I had to run this for a different group on my own, and it was hell because you're trying to run like 12 different NPCs shouting at each other.
Yeah, who are arguing.
Yeah.
So I think I said to you, okay, let's list out the NPCs and I'll take these ones and you take those ones. So I took like Liriel, the Blackstaff, the Sage with Shadowdell, who you didn't realize was going to be there, who I put in as a secret for you. it's, you know, some other NPCs that were more Waterdeep based, and you took the ones from like the Order of the Gauntlet from Baldur's Gate and some of the other more Tyranny centric ones. And so Lyriel housed the meeting. So me and the DM chair got everyone in there and had Lyriel start the meeting with this big semicircle chair of all these important people. Kla'af is stood there next to the Duke Alder of Baldur's Gate, because he is now a Duke, not the Grand Duke, but he is a Duke too. And he is the Herald of Tiamat because of what happened in Descent. So here's our other campaigns tying in again. He made a deal with Tiamat that he would warn people of her coming if she would break the chains holding down El Terrell. So he had to do that at the meeting. But it starts off with me, like, normal game voicing an NPC, and then as Lyriel is talking as me, you just jump in with your other characters shouting across her because they disagree, like a proper parliamental meeting.
Yeah.
It was so good.
That is probably the most intrusive method of co-DMing, is me literally shouting at the other person at the table.
But it was planned, though, as well. Yeah. Like, we didn't just... Like, we had a plan. Well, I didn't say, tell me what you're going to shout and comment at these moments, but I said, just shout when it makes sense and I'll react to you and it'll feel natural.
Yeah.
And it did. And I think the feedback we got from the table was great. And then, obviously, we brought in order. And after Lyriel had set up TOA, I handed over to you as Alder to set up Tyranny. Yeah. And then Kla'af did his bit as me. And then, so then I was, like, the co-DM and you were the DM, because it was you telling the story and me coming in and filling in bits. But it was very rewarding. And I'm actually, now that the parties have separated to different parts of the world, we haven't got as much co-DM happening at the moment.
No.
But when it comes back together, and I think it will come together more in Tyranny because of like the meetings again than it will in Chult. But when it does come back together, it will be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's the issue of being off in Chult. You are in a new area of the world, which I have no idea what's going on there, to be honest. Apart from what I figured out.
That's my domain. Because you're a smart bunny. Yeah. I mean, look, we've talked a lot about it now and we've given some cool examples and hopefully you've gone, yeah, that sounds really cool. But I do want to say, I think we should end with some quick tips because we got to go. So we've got a DM game in like 9 minutes, but a D&D game, but some quick tips. Do it with people you trust. Do it with people that you have the same like love for the game for. So if you both love combat, and you want to do cool duo DM combat stuff, it's not our forte, go for it. If you both love the storytelling, the lore like we do, do it the way we've done it. Be in constant conversation. Don't hold secrets from each other unless they're really not needed to know and they'll spoil the game. If there might be a reason for James knowing something, I'll tell him. If there's a reason that I might need to know something, he'll tell me. Share. And... share the limelight as well, I guess, is the other one for me, is be able to, you know, bring them in and have the boundaries too. Like if it's me DMing, but James is coming in as a co-DM, he won't overstep. And if it's James DMing and me coming as a co-DM, I won't overstep. So it's like being respectful of that kind of authority figure too, because there is kind of an authority figure in D&D, isn't there?
Yeah. I would say as well, not just the case of... hang on, how do I phrase this properly? if you have something you want to do around a certain figure, area, or whatever, and you think it might be treading on the other person's toes, you just go, hey, I'm thinking of doing something with this. Is there anything you need to tell me? And then you can go from there. So it's not just you telling the other person what you're doing. Sometimes you might have to go, I'm going to do this. With stuff that
is
you
that
might
okay?
have. Yeah.
And then it's a case of, okay, well, do I need to adapt my ideas? And if you do, you do. That's just how it goes.
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. I just can't wait for Descent.
You got a week, my friend, a week before it all comes to a tipping point. Cool. We are going to have to wrap up because we've got to go get ready for a D&D game. But thank you for joining me and thank you for being my gracious co-DM. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for being mine.
And it will continue to be a lot of fun. Mm. And I cannot wait to play TOA with you in 8 minutes. Six minutes now. And also also Descent in a couple of weeks. As ever, if you want to get involved, if you want to talk, if you want to chat, wespeakcommon@hotmail.com, @wespeakcommon on Twitter, Instagram, wespeakcommonpod on Facebook. And of course, if you want to support the show directly, the Patreon is the way. You get access to a wonderful, wonderful community of like-minded people where James and I have these conversations with them on the Discord server. And if you don't want to do that because it's free internet content, hey, it's cool, I get it. Just do me a favor, go and leave a rating and a review on Apple if you can. That's actually incredibly powerful. It's like one of the only places you can review podcasts, so please do that. It helps get in front of more people, like-minded people, and just share us with people because that helps too. Cool. James, again, thank you very much. I will see you in 6 minutes in Chol.
See you in six.
That's an express flight, that is. Thanks for listening today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, do us a favour and share us with a friend or a D&D group near you. If you'd like to directly support We Speak Common, you can by heading to the links in the description, either on this episode or via our social medias to find our Patreon. It's the best way to directly support the production of more shows like the one you listened to today. You can connect with the show on Twitter and Instagram @WeSpeakCommon. The music in the episode is Street Dancing by Timecrawler82 and is held under a Creative Commons 4.0 license. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.